Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Well, all I got is my life being free. Close so I'm up, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello and welcome to episode 96 of New Shooter Canada. This week we have a special guest to talk about a charity shoot he attended in Alberta. But before we get to that, let's introduce everybody. This week we have Mr. Mike Hissen.
Hello.
And our esteemed and prestigious guest, Mr. Uzi.
Hello.
All right, so let's start with what we did in Guns. Mike, what did you do in Guns?
Last Saturday, I shot a three-gun match. Everything went really well. I think I only had one really, and I'd call it a mental fart more than anything, just missing a target. But overall, I did really good. I came fourth overall, and I came second in my division. So I was actually really, really happy with that result. So, yeah.
Now, when you say second in your division, is that because there was another revolver shooter? There was only two of you?
No, this isn't. There's no revolver class, unfortunately. Otherwise, I would came. Actually, no, there was actually another guy shooting a revolver, but there is no revolver division in three guns. So,
okay. I just had to. I would kick this over to Mr. Uzi, but since what he did in Guns is pretty much our main topic this week, I will jump in here. And I didn't really do anything in Guns. My middle daughter, Eva, got her wisdom teeth out, so I've been kind of taking care of her for the last few days. And last weekend, I just was busy and didn't get out. So I did nothing. Big surprise there.
Mr. Mom, eh?
Yeah, Mr. Mom. Wanda says to me, she goes, I'm surprised your ex-wife actually let you have your daughter after the surgery. She goes, I don't think I would have done that. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I don't think you get to trash me like that. I'm trustworthy. I can take care of my kid after surgery. She goes, yeah, it's a mom thing. I'm like, I don't care. So, all right. So, yeah, since I didn't do anything, that's rather quick. Guns in the news. There's only one story that I thought I would bring up. And if you're on Facebook, you've probably seen it, heard it, and I think Slamfire covered it last night. Rob Giltaka. Thank you.
Giltaka.
Put up a post on Facebook. And so I really liked it. And so I thought I would copy and paste it. And cover it this week. It's regarding the 1022 issue, one of the magazines, 25 round Butler Creek, is it?
Yeah.
Has been or threatened to be banned, or I'm not really sure. It kind of depends on who you're reading. So I'm just going to go ahead and read this real quick. And Mike, if we can get the template letter that Rod did, posted on the website for anyone that wants to follow his lead.
Will do.
So this is what Rod posted up on Facebook. Number one, remain calm, which is good, solid advice. There has been similar actions years ago on these magazines. The RCMP loved to poke at gun owners for no more than their own amusement. We all know that this is a problem. If this makes it to a business bulletin, then we know this is fully implemented. If that happens, we have a full strategy in place. And then in brackets, he's got working on now. Actually, you know what? I should jump in here. If you don't know who Rod is, he is the president of the CCFR, Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights. So this is kind of what he had put out on social media. So, continuing on, in the interim, we should ensure that you know we are here. We are asking that all gun owners over the next couple days make a call to both the main firearms program number, which is 1-800-731-4000. So that number, once again, is 1-800 731-4000. And their provincial CFO's office stating, and this is what he kind of, this is the script, I guess, for lack of better terms. I am going to be arrested and charged with a criminal offense if I'm caught with a Ruger 10/22 magazine in my possession. Do you all realize there is not a problem with these magazines, and they've been around for decades, right? There is no benefit to public safety by doing this. Why does the Firearms Center continually harass and criminalize us? We've done nothing but comply with everything we've been asked. Why does the firearms program think turning hundreds of thousands of Canadians into criminals is any way positive? Okay, this is off script now. Some of this may be emotional, but in this case, these reactions will be reported up the chain. We need to be noticed. Call your MP's office and email Ralph Goodale as well. And Ralph Goodale's email address is ralph.goodale@parl.gc.ca. Here's what I would recommend.
Oh, this is the template email.
Yeah, this is the template email. And he says, change your name. So don't send the email in as Rob Kiltaka. Your name in. Minister Goodale, my name is, enter your name.
Mr. Uzi.
Yeah, Mr. Uzi. I'm located in, again, put your city and province in. The reason I'm reaching out today is I found out about yet another arbitrary action by the RCMP Firearms Laboratory declaring magazines for commonly available 22 caliber rifles in Canada as prohibited devices. These magazines have been in Canadian society for decades without incident and are likely numbered in the millions. I request that you look into the issue immediately. This action by RCMP will put millions of Canadians in unauthorized possession of a prohibited device. There is clearly no public safety benefit associated with these actions. The victimization of such a large segment of our society should be seriously considered. As Minister of Public Safety, I'm sure you're well aware that licensed gun owners are not a problem in Canada. Yet we are regularly targeted, harassed, and of course criminalized by these bureaucracies. This is neither fact-based governance, nor is it reflective of a free and equitable society. Your assistance would be greatly appreciated. Sincerely, and then put your name in. So I encourage everybody, obviously, to check this out. It'll be in the show notes. Again, make sure you put your name in your city and province. Don't just copy and paste and click send. And
I may put something in the middle of that email, so you have to read it through to make sure that I didn't put anything funny in there.
It's been a long, I think the gun community might be suffering a bit of complacency under the conservative government reign for the last, 10 years? Because they weren't overtly friendly, but they were most definitely not an enemy to gun owners. And so I think we might have suffered from a bit of complacency. So I'm going to send the email. I'll make sure I put my name and my province and my city in. And I don't own one of these, but it's the old adage: if you don't support those that are being attacked, eventually the government will come for what you do have. So.
Yeah. Your bolt action hunting rifle is going to be a sniper rifle.
Well, you know what's scary is when during the Dallas police shootings, Fox News had a quote unquote, and I use the quote liberally here, expert on talking about the firearms, and she claims This is on Fox. Like, this isn't some obscure news source. That the only difference between the assault rifle and the hunting rifle is a scope you can buy off of the internet.
Yep.
So if you take your hunting rifle and buy a scope off the internet, it's now an assault rifle.
Hey, that was a double action hunting rifle too. Don't forget that.
I think it depends on what kind of scope you put on it, right? If you put one of those really bad ones that are powered by batteries, that's different than if you just put one of those classic ones that just use glass and a little bit of painted lines.
Yeah.
But mine are made out of toilet paper rolls with fishing line inside for reticle.
Classy.
But, you know, like how scary is that? This is what the media is portraying. And the average citizen that knows nothing about guns, I'm squirreling here a bit, but I think it's important. Another video I saw on Facebook was to demonstrate how the human body reacts to being shot. And it was this kid or university student or whatever walking, and it showed him being hit, I think it was two or three times by pistol fire. And the kid barely even phased, as if it hit. You could tell when he got hit, but barely phased him. And he kept coming towards the police until they finally shot him in the head and he dropped. Like, the general public does not realize this. They get their information from Hollywood and garbage reporting like Fox Media.
Yep.
You know,
and quote unquote forensic experts.
Yeah.
Like that woman in that video is, I would have fired her if I was her boss. Just clueless.
Yeah. And this is what the general public don't get. You know, they say movies like it was one of the Die Hard movies where John Connor, or not John Connor, whatever his name is, shoots down a helicopter with a pistol.
John McClane.
You know, shoots down a helicopter with a pistol.
You never done that before?
Oh, you know, I shoot cowboy. I shoot satellites down. Like, what are you talking about? Come on. You know, but like, this is the ridiculousness that the general public don't realize. The first time Wanda came out to shoot with me, she shot my shotgun, my double barrel. And it just blew her mind of what that gun was like, because it was nothing like what she thought it would be because of the media and movies and stuff. And I was just as guilty before I started shooting guns. I was just as guilty. I was that stupid playing on the video games and, oh, look at this gun, you know. So it's important that we don't get complacent, because when garbage reporting gets out there, the general public, they just don't understand. And that's the politicians don't care about you, they don't care about me, they don't even care about the issues out there. They care about getting reelected, and that's where their focus is. So we need to educate them, and we need to show them that, like Rod said, these magazines have been around, there's been no incidents, there's no reason to do this. It's just ridiculous. Anyways, my rant is over. I'll turn the floor over to you guys. I'm done trumping the show.
Okay. Alrighty.
So they're not actually banning all 10/22 mags that have a capacity over 25. I believe that they're only banning the Butler Creek one. And I, from what I've read, and of course this is all Facebook, so you know it's 100% accurate, it all has to do with the ability to use these magazines in a pistol that also uses
the charger.
Yeah, the charger. So I guess originally they had said that these magazines won't fit in the charger, but they'll fit in a Ruger 10/22, because I believe there are still other magazines out there. I think I saw a Wolverine had posted on Facebook that there's a 110 round magazine that's still perfectly legal for the 10/22.
Yeah, that's so, the GSG one.
Yeah. So there must be some sort of difference that it doesn't allow it to...
No, they don't advertise it to be able to be used in the charger.
Okay. Oh, they don't advertise that at all?
Nope, just the 10/22.
Okay, yeah, because I did read somewhere else that the magazine capacity is limited based on the firearm that it was designed for, right? Same reason why you can put a pistol mag inside a rifle. Because it's not designed for the rifle, it's designed for the pistol. Well, same thing works in reverse when you're talking about rimfire.
Exactly. Those magazines came out decades before that charger even came out.
Yeah, so. I just pulled up the CSSA special report that they released, and I'm just looking. Yeah, here it is right here. The law says in Section 3, Bracket 2, and talking about magazine restrictions, of the Criminal Code Regulations 2, Paragraph 1A does not include any cartridge magazine that A, was originally designed or manufactured for use in a firearm that I, is chambered for or designed to use rimfire cartridges.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much telling you right there that it doesn't even apply to them. So.
Well, I was going to say, I thought there was no magazine restrictions on rimfire.
Rimfire rifles.
Rifles. Pistols still have 10-round mag.
Dude, okay. That's my bad then.
Yeah.
And the Ruger BX-25 magazines have always been prohibited because they advertise them for use in the charger. But then they came out with the BX-50, which is two 25-round mags like glued together that they didn't advertise for the pistol. So you could get those here, but not a single one because, you know, some puppies might die.
25 is too many, but 50 is okay. Good math. Exactly.
Well, I go back to what Rod had said in his post, right? Like, where's an incidence where this is a public safety issue? There's no public safety issue at all. And no. it's just... Anyways.
Yeah.
I had my rant.
They're rattling their sabers.
Yeah.
All right. So why don't we move on to the main topic then?
All right. What is the main topic?
I believe it's the Got Your Six Wounded Warrior Challenge, or charity shoot, sorry.
Yes, it was Got Your Six, and I think we were advertising this for quite some time, were we not?
Yep.
Yes.
Everybody was, yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is why we asked Mr. Thomas to be on the show. Sorry, Mr. Uzi. Okay, I got to share something. I think I shared this on my personal, Facebook, but I thought it was classic and hilarious. Said to Mike, I said, we should get Thomas on. And he goes, I don't know who that is. And there was a pause, and he goes, wait, is that Mr. Uzi? And I'm like, my work is done here. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So we got Mr. Uzi on, and if you don't know who that is, well, come out of your cave and listen to our show more often. All right, moving on. See, why did you let me be lead host?
You should know better.
Anyways, so you participated in the Check Your Six.
Got Your Six.
Charity yep. shoot. So why don't we start off with what was it and what was the charity?
It was a precision rifle match. And it went out, you know, 100 meters out to 800 meters. And then there was a bonus. You didn't know the distance till you got up on the bench and then they showed you a number and you had one shot. And if you missed, you could pay $2 a round to try to hit for the bonus. And the money went to the charity, which was Wounded Warriors. So yeah, we raised, the final numbers aren't all in yet, but last time I checked, it was over $3,000. So
that's good.
Yeah. And you know, that's pretty good for 30 shooters. And, well, there's probably over 100 people there altogether.
That's good.
But, right. Yeah, like, actually, Armor Safety, they supplied us with an ambulance and four medics free of charge. They drove up all the way from Calgary, so that was pretty cool.
Wow.
And we had Hog in Alberta. They had a pig roast for us set up there, so that was pretty good.
Sweet.
So, yeah. But, yeah, it was my first time, you know, trying out yoga while shooting at the same time.
All right. Well, let's talk about the course of fire. How did they have what was the course of fire? How did they have the shoot set up?
Well, at the Edson Range, there's a long range that's basically you're underneath a covered building shooting straight north. And that starts at 300 and goes to 1600. And then to the left of that, going kind of west northwest. There's a shorter 500 meter range. So, and it was divided into 2 days, two groups. Like the whole group was divided into two groups. And so day one, that's stage one. Basically, you went on the long range, and there was a barricade there. And if somebody doesn't know what a barricade is, it's basically a sheet of plywood standing up, and it's got a triangle and a circle and a square kind of cut in it at different heights. And so your first shot, you climbed up on the bench, like a shooting bench kind of, or a table, and you had a shot at 700. And then you go down onto the ground sitting with using the barricade at 600 meters, and then kneeling using the barricade again at 500 meters, and then kneeling again at 400 meters, and then sitting at 300 meters with the barricade again, and then back up on the bench for a 800-meter shot. So, yeah, the barricade was – I've never shot one or shot using a barricade before, so it was pretty wobbly.
Now, you posted a video up on Facebook. Is that what that video was?
I think that was the one, yep.
Okay. So yeah. If it's all right, maybe we'll I'll see if I can find that and maybe share it to our Facebook page.
Sure.
And then
yeah, because I hit first the 700, my first shot, I hit that one, and I missed every. So I missed the 600, the 500, the 400. I hit the 300 sitting on the barricade, and then I missed my 800 meter shot. So it kind of sucked.
You did hit the one. I was going to say it. Yeah, I know, because they called out it was a hit on the first one, and then I didn't remember hearing them say anything about a hit after that.
It was either, I think it was the last one.
Oh, was it?
I hit one on the barricade anyway, but.
Yeah, when I went down to Ohio to visit Red, he's got a very similar barricade set up, but he uses his with a pistol, so you actually got to shoot through the holes. Yeah. And so you're moving, like, and like you said, like, it's almost like yoga. Like, you're twisting and contorting, and, oh, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and then I have, like, I was shooting a Tika T3 light in 6.5 by 5.5 Swedish, and I had my Night Force 8 to 32 by 56 NSX scope on there. So I had it cranked up to 32 power, which, when you're on a wobbly barricade, it's like, I don't know, if there's a deer on the ground in an earthquake and you're in a helicopter trying to shoot at it, that's kind of what it seemed like to me, because, oh, man, it was
no
really...
No doubt.
Now that I think back, I should have, dialed down to 8 power or something like that, but...
Yeah, I know, like, when I've done Appleseed, same thing. Like, they'll tell you, don't crank your you think that cranking your magnification up is going to help you, but it's not, because every little twitch, every little movement is going to be magnified in that scope.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, well, the reason, my eyes, they're terrible. So I, before the match, they actually set up, because when you're looking from the bench, it's just a sea of orange plates. And if they didn't have meter markers on the side, on the left side, it would have been pretty much impossible to see. Like, to tell which distance, because once you get past like 400 meters, like the 1,000 meter one, it looked like it was at 800 meters right behind the 600 meter. But unless I had to look at the post and then go back in. But yeah, something to learn anyway. And then with the wind, it was pretty gusty and whatever. So my spotter told me on the 800 meter shot, because I had 2 minutes of windage on for that. And I still went to the left or to the right of the target, so it's pretty windy.
Now, if memory serves me correct, there was no time limit. Like, this was not a timed shoot.
Right, right.
Like, exactly. It was take your. What was the command?
On your own time.
On your own time. That's right. So yeah. There wasn't a lot of pressure that way, because shooting at 100 meter or 800 meters, no pressure there.
Yeah, but there was after a few guys went through, they were trying to speed it up because they had people that you know, they go on the bench and they would adjust their parallax and then, I don't know, fill around for quite a bit, but whatever. So they strike, okay, you know, there's no time limit, but hurry up.
Yeah.
Because we had to, you know, finish before midnight type of thing. But.
Yeah. We don't want to put guys out there with glow sticks.
No, but it's kind of funny because they're, you know, this one older guy, Don, that I first met him there, he was shooting the match with a Ruger number one. So it's a single shot hunting rifle in 243 with a 3-9 Bushnell scope on it. And I gave him a bipod to use, but yeah, because people are, you know, oh, I can't, you know, I don't have a rifle good enough. And here he shows up with, you know, a single shot rifle and he did all right. So
yep.
It's not the Indian, it's the arrow, or not the arrow, it's the Indian.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
And that's,
you get some people that have, it's like an equipment race and they have a $6,000 rifle and a $4,000 scope and a this and a that. And then you...
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't matter as long as you don't know how to use it.
Yeah, ask them what school they went to learn how to use it all, and why would I need to go to school?
Yeah. Well, when it never fails when I go to a cowboy shoot, because my lever action rifle is not short stroked. I'm like, oh, you need to short stroke. Oh, you need to do this. You need to do this. And I'm like, you know what? When my skill set exceeds my equipment, then I'll worry about doing that. Until then, it's not the equipment slowing me down, it's the guy behind the trigger.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times people, you know, when I first got into golfing, it was the same thing, you know, like people would be going out and spending all these absurd amount of money on golf clubs. I had, my first set was, talking about screwing off, my first set was, my woods were actually made out of wood. And a buddy had bought them for me, a family friend. And I'm like, seriously, this is what you bought? He goes, well, here's my clubs. They cost, I can't remember what they cost. It was a ridiculous amount of money. He goes, swing. And, of course, you know, burn in the grass. You know, lucky to get it 10 meters. He just crack, and, like, the ball is just gone. And he's like, don't give me this crap about these clubs aren't good. These clubs are good. You're not. Okay, fair enough, you know. So it's sometimes people tend to forget that, right? Oh, if I buy all these Mall Ninja adapters and parts and pieces, I'll be a better shooter.
Yeah.
You personally have to become the better shooter, not your rifle.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we see that lots here on the ski hills. All the Japanese tourists come and they'll spend, you know, $10,000 on a fancy pair of skis and boots and poles and snowsuit, and they're on their ass all day because they can't ski, but they spent all the money.
Exactly right.
All right. So we move on then, or what?
Yeah, so that was stage one. Now, was that like stage one, day one? Was it basically
yep.
That was it for day one? Just that one?
No. There's another four. I got the course of fire. So there's four stages on day one.
All right. Now, was it, that was the first stage?
Yeah.
Okay. So what was, run through stages 2, 3, and 4.
Okay. Stage 2 is the sandbag bunker. I posted a picture on my Facebook.
Oh, I think I remember seeing that. That was the tight fit one, right? Where they had like a plank going across the top of the
sandbags. Oh, yeah. Basically, I'm about 5'10 and 155 pounds. And it was really awkward to lift my arm, my right arm, and work my bolt. Like, it was really cramped in there. And then how they built it, the front was built up. So basically, like, your from your waist down to your feet was hanging out the end. And then you had this huge, you know, incline at the front. So your body's bent up in like a horseshoe. And you're cramped right in there. And then it was raining, like pouring. I was soaked. It was ridiculous. But yeah, so you crawled in the bunker, and then they told you what range to shoot at. So that was on the medium range, and it goes from 100 to 500 meters. So you crawl in there, and you had two rounds at each range, and he'd call out, you know, 100 meters. So you'd, and then there was a target board at 100 meters with different targets with numbers on them. So he'd be like, the middle target board, target number 4, and then you'd shoot that target. So if you shot the wrong target, you didn't get any points. And then he would say, you know, 500 meters. And there was gongs at 2, 3, 4, and 5. So it was really awkward in that one. It wasn't too bad, though. I'm pretty sure I got all my hits on that one.
Was there a time limit on that one?
No. But it was, oh, man, the skies just opened up on that one, and it was just ridiculous. Because one guy said that, like, the plywood, the water was dripping in front of his scope, just in front of his scope, and was hitting his barrel of his rifle and splashing up, so he couldn't see through his scope. Couldn't see the targets.
Oh, man.
Because it was raining so hard. But, yeah. So that was stage two, anyway. And then stage three, it's called a pistol heavy contact. So, your sniper's hide has been compromised. You've been flanked by the enemy. Take the enemy spotter out of commission while he thinks he's safe at 800 meters. You can get 5 points for a one-round hit and lose 1 point for any additional rounds needed to hit. And I think that's the one that you could pay for extra shots. Okay. I can't remember. Oh, no, that's the next one. Or that's on day two. So anyway, you climb up on the bench, and you shoot to 800. And then now that you dealt with the spotter, quickly make your way to the pistol range. So you really got to run down the hill where an enemy has attempted to set up an ambush. Upon getting to your shooting position, engage targets with pistol to finish the match. So there was 10, like, IPSC targets down in there. So you had two magazines, and you'd run down, and you'd shoot each target once, change your pistol magazine, and then shoot them all one more time. So that was that one. And I was going too fast, and I missed one pistol shot, but I got all the other ones because I was excited.
I'd be out of breath. I'd be like, seriously, I got to run. Can I just throw a grenade? Just throw a damn grenade. Let's frag them. I'll get them. Mostly.
How set is this rule on running?
Listen, man, I shoot cowboy. We don't run nowhere. We walk.
Yeah, and then stage four is called Yogi the Bear Shoot. So on this one, we used both the short range, which is like a pistol 22 kind of a range beside the medium range there. So basically, you're down at the bottom of the hill, and then you run up. When the air horn blew, you ran up. You know, with your rifle magazine in one hand, your rifle in the other hand. And you get to the picnic table, and there's a target at 300 meters. So you shoot three rounds at 300 meters, and then you go on the rooftop, but then you forgot he stole your ammunition. Yogi Bear stole your ammunition. So basically, then you give the range officer six rounds. Then you run back down to the short range, and then there's this big, huge poster of Yogi the Bear. And then, so, you shoot Yogi the Bear twice with your pistol, and then run back up to the medium range, and then the RO would give you your six rounds, and there was two targets at 400 meters that you had to shoot off a rooftop. So that was pretty cool.
That's fun.
Got all my shots on that one. And that was the end of day one. And then after that, it was pig roast and relax time.
Nice.
So then day two started. So it's called stage five, contact RPG on the long rifle range. So out on patrol, an RPG round flies overhead, simulated by an air horn. As you hurry into a prone position, fire four rounds at the RPG team hiding at 300 meters before they fire again. You'll have to reload, though, because this isn't a Rambo movie. So it's kind of good because there was three of us that had Tikas, and me and my buddy each have this huge 10-round magazines that we got from Australia, and then we each have a couple 5-rounders and 3-rounders, so we all shared magazines with people that needed them. And then once you reload, you can engage the machine gun crew quickly who are shooting from 300 meters. So yes, so you had basically 4 rounds at 300 meters, and then 3 rounds at 300 meters again. So yeah, and then the next one was Where's Waldo, it was called. This one was kind of cool. Like the pistol bay at the Edson range is huge. It's like a big square. It's close to 100 meters by 100 meters, and it's got a, I don't know, probably 20-foot high berm all around it. And just less like a hole in the one wall that you can drive into or walk into or whatever. So we were all outside of that, and you had 3 rounds pistol, and they said, okay, so we're not sure where he is. You'll have to bring your trusty handgun and find him. Be careful, though. We hear he has a suicide vest on. So we're all...
Of course, you know.
Yeah, so what you had to do is you're all standing outside. No one could see anybody else shooting or anything, right? And then when it was your turn, you'd go up, and you would show your pistol was clear, and put a magazine in your pistol, put it in your holster, and then you had, I think it was 40 seconds, or this is the only one that had a time limit. So when he, are you ready? Yep. Okay, go. And then you'd run in around the corner, and you probably ran close to 100 meters. You go into the pistol bay, and then you come around, and there's like probably 20 Where's Waldo looking cardboard targets, and they all were like really close together, kind of behind each other, and all jumbled up, and there was a stake that you had to stop at, so you couldn't get any closer, and then you had to find the one that had a suicide vest. So, you know, I'm looking for a guy with a suicide vest on, and they all friggin' look the same. I'm looking, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna run out of time. Then he grabs me and he turns my body. He's like, it's right there. And I'm like, there's no vest, man. They're all painted the same. They all look exactly the same. Well, then he's like, look for the green box. Well, they had pulled out this green, like, circuit board or whatever out of a computer or something like that.
Right.
And kind of tied a piece of string to it and put it on the one target. So it would, I don't know. It totally didn't look like what I thought a suicide vest would look like. So I'm like, okay. And then I triple tap that. And then just as I finished shooting, my time was up. But that was really fun because nobody knew. Nobody could watch anybody else do it. So it was pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. And it's unique, too. I've never heard of a stage like that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And then actually throughout the whole weekend, there was... A lady named Sarah, I can't remember her last name, but she's a photographer, and she was just shadowing everybody, taking hundreds and hundreds and thousands, probably, pictures for the whole thing. And then there was another guy, like all the pictures I posted the other day were from him. And so, yeah, it was pretty neat. There's pictures. I didn't find one of me with the Waldo thing yet, but I'll post one up so you can have a look at it. But yeah, it was pretty cool. And then stage 7 was the doghouse, and you screwed up. So, well, the wife is mad at you for attending an epic shooting competition on your birthday.
Oh, that's awesome.
On your way to the doghouse, you come under enemy fire. Off the top of the doghouse, you will need to return fire at hostiles that are at 1, 2, and 300 meters. From the standing position. So it was basically a doghouse with a slanted roof on it that you could stand on a sandbag to be high enough to hold your rifle on the roof and shoot. And he'd tell you, you know, shoot a 2 rounds at 100, 2 rounds at 2 rounds at 3. Then you had to crawl inside this doghouse in the prone.
Oh, no.
And which was all right, but the front of the dog, like the little window that you shot out of, it was just like a sheet of plywood, and it was about 2 feet up. So you could bring whatever you wanted to try to figure out how to get in a stable position, because, you know, your waist and your legs are on the ground, and then your chest is way up in the air, so you're like in a horseshoe again, kind of like that other, the bunker one.
Right.
But worse, because I got all my hits off the roof, and then I crawl in there, and I got my hits at 400, and got my first one at 500, and then the muscle on the right side of my spine just started twitching, and my whole body was just twitching and cramping, and then I took a shot and sacrificed a bullet to the range gods, and the medic standing there, he's like, "Oh my God, I can see his back twitching." I'm like, "Yeah, my feet, pull me out of here."
Oh no.
So yeah, but that was pretty fun too, because, you know, I kind of watched other people before, and they were bringing like their backpacks and shooting mats and all their shooting bags and trying to get your body up enough, because you couldn't kneel, because then it was pretty low inside there. You couldn't really sit, because then your rifle's too high and you can't rest it on anything. And like, they designed the barricade too, like, it was not comfortable. You, on purpose, they made it so that you had to, you know, figure out what to do to get good hits. So yeah, and then stage 8 was the last one. So you got 2 rounds to complete your mission. Should you miss and want more ammunition, you can make a donation to your department's quartermaster for additional ammunition. Budget cuts are a bitch. And a $2 donation to Wounded Warrior will be allowed to fire more than 2 rounds should you miss with your initial 2. So you're finding yourself moving onto the roof of a building opposite of a hostage situation. Utilize your bipod, rear bag, or rucksack to find a comfortable and stable shooting position. You will have 2 minutes to take position and fire 2 rounds. So this was the other one that had a time limit. So basically, you jumped up on the table, and I think it was 300 meters. There was an IPSC target with like half of an IPSC target head poking out from beside it as the hostage taker. So you'd have a shot at that. And you weren't allowed to take a shot at the 800. Oh no, that was the one with the bonus. So they told me 1200 meters. So I had stage started, they said, "Okay, we told you guys to bring dope for 800, but this range is a 1600 meter range, so you might need extra dope." So everybody went on their ballistic computers, and people were all freaked out because there's no cell service, and I had good service, so I just got my dope out to 1600, kind of figured out, and I shot the hostage taker, so that was cool. So I had 1 round of free ammunition to take a shot at 800 and or whatever it was, and I missed, and then I'm like, "Oh, you want to try again?" And it was windy, like real hard left to right wind, and I put 2 or 3 minutes on and tried again and didn't see anything. And I looked back, because the spotters, the whole shoot, they would not correct you. They would just tell you if you hit it or not. Eh? So you had no idea if you missed, no idea. Shakes his head. I'm like, "Well, put another round on my tab." Took another shot. I think I took 5 or 6 shots. Never did hit it. And he said, "Oh, you're getting closer and closer, but it was just to the right every time." So yeah, they took a bunch of my money.
Well, for a good cause at least.
Yeah. Yeah, you bet. And then actually my spotter, he told us his story about suffering from PTSD and how he contemplated ending his life and all that, and then people kind of noticed the symptoms, and now he's on the road to recovery and getting help and hanging out and back in the game of life. So it was pretty cool. Actually, his story made me cry. So it was actually a really good shoot.
Well, that's cool.
And then I tied for 6th place. So yeah, it was pretty good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I had a couple questions that came up while you were shooting. Was there a spotter on every stage that you did?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
But like, they had a, a scorekeeper and a spotter.
Okay. But you, then, like you said at the end, though, the spotter didn't actually help you out. They were literally just there to tell you if you made your hit or not.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you hit, he would say impact, and then the scorekeeper would put a little dot because each hit was worth 1 point. So
okay.
All he did was basically tell the scorekeeper that you hit it or not. So yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But it's my whole range too, so I had I kind of knew anyway.
Like had a little bit of home court advantage there.
Yeah, except for the wind. That I don't know. It's always windy there, so it's kind of cool because it's always left to right or right in your face. So I was like, man, like last time I was here, it was just as windy, and I put 2 or 3 minutes on, and I hit it. I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but I guess because the flags, they also put wind flags up for the chute, and there's never wind flags there normally, but after I shot, I was thinking the flag kind of halfway out there was not flapping in the breeze, so I think because of the rain, it soaked it, and then it wasn't flapping.
Oh, like it was too heavy to.
Yeah, so okay. I think because I was looking at the flags and I was like, oh, it doesn't, you know, it's windy here, but not out there, and I'll just put 2 minutes on. But if I had to put like 4 minutes on, then I think I would have hit the target. But oh well,
yeah.
It was fun and
yeah. Okay. So when you're going through this whole match, were you doing so? It was one shooter on a stage at a time, correct?
Yep.
And so was it. Like, were there multiple stages going on at once, or was it everyone does stage one, everyone does stage two?
There was two groups of shooters. Like, there was 30 shooters, and they divided us up in, like, half. So, on day one, they used, because we were using the long range and the medium range with the bunker at the same time. So, whoever was finished shooting stage one went over to shoot stage two, and whoever finished stage two would come over and shoot stage one.
Okay.
So, yeah, we were using basically everything at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But because there was no time limits on a lot of it, we were still, I don't know, we were done at probably 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, something like that. We didn't start shooting till about 11. And then we had to have a ceasefire because a deer decided to go on the range, so...
Yeah, we've had that happen at our range. It's interesting. You got a line full of guys shooting rifle, and all of a sudden everyone just stops, and we got to stand there and wait for the stupid deer to clear the range.
Yeah,
it's like there's something really wrong. We got all these guns and no one's shooting
and no venison.
Yeah. And no steak tonight. There's something very wrong with this picture.
Yeah.
And then hunting season rolls around, and they're nowhere to be found.
Yeah, you can't find them anywhere.
Stupid things. Oh, yeah. So do you usually do, like, long-range type competitions?
No, I just shoot service rifle. That's the only thing I shoot all the time.
Okay.
But no, I have a spot, well, plus the range, but I have a spot in a field at the farm that... we just always go to and shoot. Cause I bought this big plate that's probably, I don't know, like a 3 times the size of an IPSC target. So it's kind of nice when you're by yourself. You can go out far and it's always windy and you can see where you're hitting.
3 times the size of an IPSC target, that's got to be like...
Yeah, that's pretty heavy.
Yeah, it's going to be heavy and big, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's only 3/8 thick, so it's not too heavy, and you can really hear it. So it's like, I don't know, some guys are like, oh, it should be a half inch. Well, then I can't set it up by myself if it's a half inch. And then you can barely hear it because I use 223 for service rifle. So if you hit a half inch plate with a 223, sometimes you can't even tell if you hit it or not unless you can see the paint chip off.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what were you using for equipment for this match?
Well, I was my Atika T3 Light, which is a hunting rifle, and I had a Lucky 13 10-round magazine, and it was chambered in 6.5 by 5.5 Swedish Mauser, and I was using Lapua 139 grain Cnar bullets and Reloader 22 powder Lapua cases, and Night Force NXS 8.32x56 scope, and Harris bipod. And I had a Voodoo Tactical cheek piece. And it's kind of, my buddy bought me this camera, what they're called. It's like a quarterback coach or quarterback something or other. It's a like a plastic Velcro, the thing that Velcros on your arm, and then it's got a see-through plastic window. So you put your dope sheet in there, and then you attach it to your forearm.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
Can't remember what they're called, but that was really handy because you could just, you know, look at that and dial in your wind or your elevation, and that worked pretty good.
Yeah.
And I had all my bags, they're GSA tactical bags from BC. They're made out there.
Okay. So
yeah.
Now you've used the term dope sheet a few times, just for those new to shooting and have no idea. Me included. What is a dope sheet?
Okay, dope is an acronym for data on previous engagements. So basically, I knew this match was coming up and for sure had to shoot out to 800 meters. So I went to my spot with my nice big plate and I zeroed my scope for 100 meters. So basically on my elevation and windage turrets, I shot and adjusted my scope until it was getting bullseyes, and then I took my little set screws out of my turrets, lifted them up, turned them so that the zero was on the zero line, and then I tightened them back down, and then to go to 200 meters, and I shot, and I had to come up 2.25 minutes of angle on my elevation, so I wrote that down, and then went to 300, shot, adjusted my scope until it was getting bullseyes, and that was 4.50 minutes. And then 400 meters was 8.0 minutes. 500 meters, 11.75. 600 was 15. 700 was 19. And 800 was 24.5. So basically, at 800 meters, 1 minute of angle would be basically 2 inches. So I got 100 meters, that's 1 inch. And 400 would be like one click on my scope is 1 inch at 400.
Right.
So I had to keep, like, my elevation turret is 10 minutes per turn for one complete revolution. So, man, when I'm getting to 800, it's 2.5 turns. So you really have to keep track, unless you can use your reticle, but then you're looking in your reticle, like me anyway, looking in it and you see all these hash marks and it's like, you're trying to, okay, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, and then you got to remember what line to look at and then hold that line on the target. So I just dial up, so I'm holding my crosshairs on center of target, so right. I don't have to worry about anything.
Now in your video, I think you can see that in your video when you're getting ready to go down prone, right? You start spinning the turret. Because when I saw that, I'm like, he's just spinning the turret. How in the hell does he know what to turn it to, what setting? Like, so that's because you already had all that data from your dope sheet, right?
Yep, you bet. And then actually on my scope, also, it's got these little lines. Like, as you turn your turret up, it exposes little lines that are on, like, not the part that you turn with your fingers, but on, like, the turret housing or whatever.
Right.
And there's little lines, and it's 1, 2, 3. So basically, it worked out good. My 100 meter zero, when my rifle was zeroed, was at the 2 line. So after, you also see me going up and down between stages because I would zero my turret back to zero.
Right.
So I wouldn't get screwed up. So, and then before every time when I was. Up next to shoot, I would verify that my scope was at zero in case, you know, somebody walked down the rack and gave her a couple turns.
Oh, that's dirty, dirty, dirty. So yeah. once you got seated, so if you're zeroed in at 100 and they call out a 300 meter target, then you just you'd look at your dope sheet and go, okay, well, 300 is this many minutes. I got to turn it this many times.
Yep.
And you'd, yep. And that's that sheet there is what would give you that information.
Yep, you bet.
Oh, that's cool. I had no idea. I mean, of course I knew, but, you know, our listeners, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, they may not have known.
Yeah.
This is why I started the show, because people say things, and I'm like, what the heck is he talking about? So, yeah. Sorry.
So where did you learn how to shoot like this? Because you're very knowledgeable in this, a lot of this long-range shooting.
My dad was in the Army, so he was a warrant officer. And so we did lots of shooting when I was young, but I don't know. I just started doing it. I just bought, actually, my first brand new rifle was when Remington first came out with the 710. It was a $200 30-06 that I bought. And I used to work up north at a camp, and we set up a range on the one pipeline, and I just started shooting. It was really accurate. And then I moved to Edson, so then I started getting into hunting and stuff. And then, I don't know, me and my buddies would just start seeing who could hit something the furthest out type of thing. And then I started, you know, buying. I used to have about a $200 a month gun magazine addiction. Just reading, you know, all the gun magazines and stuff. And that's kind of before the internet kind of happened, so... I don't know. Like, no, I've never.
You've never, done like a course or?
Nope.
Oh, no, it's just very, this is very in-depth stuff that, I don't know, I can't imagine just learning it on my own. So I'm very impressed that you learned all this on your own.
Hey, Mike, oh, yeah. we don't call him Mr. for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah, the Uzi part's deceiving, though, because you'd assume someone who's known as Mr. Uzi is known as Mr. Spray and Pray, not Mr. Precision.
Okay, fair enough, touche.
But actually, then I met this guy. He's the guy that got me into service rifle shooting, so he doesn't like to be named, so I won't name him, but... Yeah, he got me into service rifle. He drug my ass out to Chilliwack. We shot the British Columbia Rifle Association Service Conditions Provincials. So here I am with no semi-automatic rifle. I had my Night Force scope at the time, but it's a 30-millimeter tube, and it's got a 56-millimeter objective lens, so it's huge, right? I didn't have... A rifle that was suited for this kind of match. Never shot anything like this before in my life. And also, there's a clock in the back of your head ticking because it's got a time limit. And I'm used to, like, we'd go to the range and I'd shoot grasshoppers off the target board at 100 meters, like, no problem, right? We go to Chilliwack, and, well, the night before we left, we drove to Steve Emblin's house. He's the guy with EM Precision. He lent me a Swiss Arms that we got back to Edson at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And then I tried to put a scope on it, but nothing would fit because he just had iron sights on it. And I couldn't make a scope fit because the objective lenses kept touching the frame or the receiver. So next day, get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, go to work, come home. Then we go to Kamloops, spend the night in the Walmart parking lot in the trailer, and then we're panicking, driving around Kamloops with my Dodge diesel crew cab long box truck pulling a 30-foot trailer all around Kamloops to all these gun stores looking for risers or bigger rings or trying to get something to put a scope on. So there's nothing. So I'm like, I'm going to have to use iron sights, and I'm half blind. So we get to Chilliwack, and there's this really awesome store called Chilliwack Dart and Tackle, and they happen to have a Burris Pepper mount for a 1-inch scope, because I brought two scopes, my Night Force. We couldn't mount it because we couldn't find any 30-millimeter rings, and then so we got the Burris Pepper mount, and he bore sighted it, and it was my hunting scope. So it's a Bushnell I can't remember, but it was like a 4-12, and that it had like turrets, but there was no markings on the turrets. So you start out at 200 meters, shoot, and then adjust your scope. So I finally got zeroed at 200. I was like, okay. And then I go back to 300. So I was zeroed at 200, and when I got to the 300, you have all your sighters, right? You shoot, they pull the target, they mark it, they put it back up so you can see where you hit it. So I'm adjusting, counting clicks, writing it down all the way to 500, and then that scope fogged up. I couldn't see through it. So I could see the I always shoot with both eyes open, so I could see the target with my left eye. I could see the crosshairs with my right eye. So basically, I'd like superimpose the crosshairs on the target. And I got a few hits, but it was then doing rundowns because you had to run all the way to 100 meters, shooting every, like, shoot at 5, run to 4, shoot there, run to 3, shoot at 3. And then the whole way down, I'm trying to remember to adjust my scope and keep track of the number of clicks. Well, it didn't work out very well, so I decided I'm going to buy my own rifle, and I did, and a better scope. So, yeah, and now Matthew McClatchy is trying it out. So, yeah, so that and then that's what really, because I'm like, oh, man, I'm shooting prone. This is awesome. And then all of a sudden it's like you have 20 seconds to shoot 10 rounds with a magazine change, go. In the kneeling position.
Oh, jeez.
But it was fun, and I did not come in last place my first year. And actually, the funny story about that, there's also pistol. Friday is pistol day. So after we get the rifle all ready, we had a camp. We had set up camp in this campsite right near the range. And my buddy makes wine. So at this store here in town, they were clearing out 1 liter jugs of apple juice. So he bought like a whole pallet and made apple wine. And I drank a whole bottle of apple wine that night, and it didn't agree with me. The next day, I was ill, and I slept, and it was raining the whole day. Friday, pistol. There's 100 people shooting pistols, and I'm sleeping on like the 30 meter firing line in my Helly Hansen rain suit. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
So after that, I didn't have any more apple wine for the last few years.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
But yeah, and that's how, you know, I met Ryan Stacey that first year, and he gave me some pointers, and I meet him every year there, and hope it's awesome. So, but I've never been to any kind of formal training, even with pistol. And like I shoot service rifle. There's no service rifle in Alberta, so I shoot a service rifle one match once a year in BC, and you know, I do pretty good. So I'm shooting against people that it's their job, like the Canadian military shooting team guys and police officers that are on SWAT teams and these IPSC shooters and stuff. And it's a lot of fun. And they always say that, you know, if I practiced more, I would be better. But yeah, I just do it for fun. I'm not there to.
Oh, yeah.
It's really. Yeah. But that's why, you know. So I'm going to the handgun course that Matthew and Trevor are putting on. So maybe that'll help me out for next year. That'll be my first actual course ever.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
But I was thinking of. I'm trying to get on a Rob Furlong course, but it's always on a. It's a week-long thing, and I work a week, and I get a week off, and the timing never works out. And we were going to go to one, but then it got canceled because a bunch of people backed out or something like that. So
that's too bad.
I was thinking about, like, everybody has a gun, but there's not much training here compared. Like, you guys have that Fire Arts Solution place and Phase 9 Green Tactical and all kinds of stuff. And out here, there's Rob Furlong, he does pistol, rifle, and carbine stuff. And then Ben Click with Sierra 64 Rifle Craft, he'll do clinics for pistols and rifles. But
yeah, there's a few small I'll call them small time course, like people who run courses, but there's just not a lot of advertisement for them. So even if you are looking for training, I've found sometimes it's hard to find, or it's limited in what you can find. So
yeah, and it's expensive.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah. That's what I like about RJ's course was he's amazing with his pricing, very reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, be thankful. Yeah. Every course I want to do, I have to remember to double the price. One for me, one for Sarah.
Yeah.
I don't have that problem. But, you know, I spend enough on scrapbooking stuff, I guess.
There you go. One of you used to be into the crocheting and doing that artsy stuff, too. Then she won a shotgun, and that's all gone out the window now.
Oh, sweet.
Now she wants a Ruger, what's it called, Muddy Girl camo, the pink camo.
Yeah, the 1022.
Yeah. So she wants one of those, she wants to get her license, she wants to do this, she wants to do that. And I just keep telling her, and I want to put a bayonet lug on your shotgun.
Tell her she can't get a 1022 because the magazines are, you can't buy them anymore. So you can't even buy the rifle to use it with. Yeah.
I'll tell her that after she buys it. Oh, sorry, dear. You know what? Rifle's useless. Might as well just leave it at my place.
Yeah, that's Big Brother's new way of gun control. Just take all the magazines away.
Yeah. Hey, I own a pink gun. I'll shoot pink guns. I'm secure enough in my masculinity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's like my rifle. It has white hockey tape all over it. So I know it's mine when it's in the rifle rack. And then also after, like, on the matches when I grab the barrel to jump off the bench, it doesn't burn my hand.
Right.
And actually I had it all taped up for winter for hunting, so it was all covered in white hockey tape.
That is so Canadian. White hockey tape.
Well, you can buy that tape for guns, but you can't find it when you need it. And then every time in the summertime, I'm like, oh, cool, they got the white tape. Yeah, it's $50 a roll. Yeah, no, I can stay on the shelf.
Is it $7 for a roll of hockey tape?
Well, it's not even. Like, you go to the arena here in town, and you can buy a whole roll. There's probably 5 or 6 rolls in a log or whatever, and it's like $6, $10.
Yeah, there you go.
So I just buy that for my son for his hockey, and I steal 1 or 2 rolls and give him the rest.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah.
Well, let's move on to events. Mike, I've been trumping the show, so why don't you take event number one?
Sure. On Saturday, July 16th, Land Shooting Supplies will be hosting a fundraising shoot at the Silverdale Gun Club for Make-A-Wish Foundation. There'll be guns to try with qualified instructors on hand. No firearms licenses required. If you wish to donate any products or volunteer your time to help out, please email them at gunrange4u@yahoo.ca. And that's the number 4 and the letter U.
All right. And event number 2. Is the Barry Gun Club 4th Annual Ladies' Day is on Sunday, October 4th. Okay, let's try that again. Don't edit that. That's golden. Barry Gun Club 4th Annual Ladies' Day is on Sunday, October 4th from 12 to 5. There's no experience necessary. No firearms license is required, as you'll be supervised by one of the safety instructors to help the ladies shoot a variety of pistols, rifles, and shotguns. Also, cowboy action and skeet and trap. There's a $20 registration fee, with all proceeds going to the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation. Any donations will receive a tax-deductible receipt from the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation. For registration and more information, please contact Susan Rattel.
Yep.
All right. Woohoo. Way to go, George. At Susan.Rattel, RATELLE, at BarryGunClub.org. Event number 3. Do you have the show notes up there, Tom?
Yeah.
You want to do an event number 3?
Number three, Aztec Armory Algonquin Cup 2016 Level 2 IDPA match at the Eagle Lake Gun Club in Sunridge, Ontario. Will be on September 18th. For more information, please visit algonquincup.ca. So that's ALGONQUINCUP.ca.
All right, listener email. We didn't get any emails this week, so if you hear something on the show you didn't understand or you want to send in a question or comment, please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca. You can get a hold of us on our Facebook page or in the comments section of the website. All right, so iTunes, Stitcher, I didn't check. Did you check? I did. Okay.
And all of the reviews are right there.
Zero. So go give us a 5-star review.
I already did. I did that years ago.
We're just that awesome. Tim Krosno down in Texas. His Facebook or his iTunes said, okay, whiners, here's your 5-star review. I'm like, hey, I don't care. It's 5 stars. I'll take it. So, Facebook likes. I checked that today. We're at 863. All right, so that brings us to closing comments. We are giving away a limited edition New Shooter Canada hat. Actually, this is compliments of Mr. Mike, so big round of applause, Mr. Mike. Insert audio clip here. There's the cheering. Not to pick on the spot. It's limited edition because no one else has one but George and Mike.
I'm assuming you have a hat.
Well, I've got the camel with the Hunter Orange.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
All you need to do is download our flyer on our website, newshootercanada.ca, and take a selfie with it posted up. You can be at your shooting range, your favorite gun club, your shop, or even your work lunchroom.
Sweet. I know what I'll be doing tomorrow at lunch.
Post up your photo on your Canada Facebook page or email it into the show so we have it by August 24th to be entered in the draw. Right now, you have a 100% chance of winning because we have no submissions. So if Mr. Uzi gets his in, you've got a 50-50 chance.
Sweet.
Shout outs. How about we start with the guests? Mr. Tom, do you have any shout outs?
Yeah, I got a shout out for Tony Burton from Burton Tactical and George Woodland for putting on the Got Your Six match and raising over $3,000 for Wounded Warriors.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because your guys' charity shoot, you guys did pretty good too, though, eh?
Yeah, we did 5,500 with the numbers escaping me. I think we had like almost double the turnout that you guys had.
Yeah, because we only had like, well, we had 30 shooters and then, you know, other people that were there to watch and stuff, so.
Yeah, I can't remember what our final registration shooter-wise was. I think it was like 40 or 50, but we had, I think, 70-ish that were there with the vendors and everything.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
So sure.
Sounds like a good number.
Yeah. Hey, say it with authority. No one else is going to know, right?
Convince yourself, you'll convince others.
There you go. The signs of a good salesman. But yeah, that's just amazing. Like for such a small, concentrated number of people to be able to raise that kind of money is quite impressive.
Yeah. Well, we had you know, donations from businesses and stuff too. So, not just, well, also too, we each had T-shirts. So the people that made the T-shirts basically did them for cost, and then we could buy them for $20, and then all that money went into the charity as well. So. And then people paying for extra rounds on that one bonus stage.
I can imagine that there's some people that probably racked up a bit more of a bill than they were expecting. I'll take one more. Just one more.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, the guy, the RO is asking him, how much money do you have?
Is this charge or cash? We got a debit machine up at the clubhouse.
Yeah.
So, all right, Mike. Well, you know what? Let's bring this down to you because you've got a huge, huge announcement to make. So how about you do your shout out next?
Well, my shout out is to Sarah. And it's because just this past Monday, she gave birth to our very first child.
Woohoo!
Yep. So Sarah brought a new shooter into the world.
And what's the new shooter's name?
Leela. Yep.
Awesome.
So
we'll have to set her up with some pink new shooter Canada swag.
That may already be in progress.
That is so awesome. Then you have to make sure you get pictures up.
Yep.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations to both you and Sarah.
Thank you.
So I said to Tom before we started, I'm like, yeah, he just had a kid. I'm not sure if he's making it tonight or not. So this may be the George and Tom show. So that's awesome that you were able to make it, and that is just amazing. I remember I've been through it 3 times, and it's just wow. It's an amazing experience and time to be a family.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, my shout outs are I got none. I'll give a shout out to my daughter Eva. She is she had her wisdom teeth taken out on Thursday, and she's an absolute trooper. So there's my shout out. She's a tough chick.
Shout out to Tylenol 3 with codeine.
Yeah. We've been at my parents' place the last couple of days because I was on the road, and then she had the surgery, so we ended up spending the night there again on Thursday. And so her pain was all right, and then I'm like, well, I got T1s at home. And so we get back, and so she took a T1, and then a few hours later she comes out and she does the like a T with her hands, and then she puts up 3 fingers, and I'm like, yes, dear, you could have a T3. So, but yeah, no, she's been doing good. She's one hell of a trooper. So that's my shout out this week. Not gun related, but when you get 4 teeth ripped out of your jaw, I think it deserves a shout out.
Yep.
So that concludes.
So anyone else who has 4 teeth ripped out of their mouth and wants a shout out.
Yeah, just email George at hosts@newshootercanada.ca and you get 4 teeth ripped out of your jaw. Hey, and if you do it without anesthetic and just a bottle of whiskey, man, you get respect. Quick little story. Because you know, I never
scroll. Quick?
Quick. I don't know. Hey, you know, it's Friday night. No one's working tomorrow, so it's all good. Eva's coming out of her anesthetic days, and I'm like, Eva? And she's like kind of giving me googly eyes because she has no idea which way's up. I'm like, you know, back in the Old West, you know how they used to do dental surgery? It was with a bottle of whiskey and a pair of pliers. And of course, Wanda ups me one in the back of the head. My ex-wife's sitting there looking at me going, seriously, did she just say that? And Jessica, my youngest, starts laughing. And I'm like, yeah, I love being me.
So, what could be worse could be like that movie with Tom Hanks when he's stuck on the island with that volleyball, Wilson.
Skate.
Yeah, skate blade and a big rock, and he just smashes his tooth out. Oh, that made my teeth hurt watching that.
It could be worse.
So, yep. The only easy day was yesterday. It's all good.
Yep. All right, so with that being said, let's bring this episode to a close. So until next week, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
Say something clever.
Shoot off the mag.
Shoot off the mag. Right on. Till next week, guys. Take care.
Snake.
Well, I really like 22 Mag.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Good night, Kelly. Stacy. Does she still get mad when you say her name lots?
No, she hasn't yelled at me lately, but yeah. That doesn't really say a whole lot either, because I get yelled at a lot by a lot of people, so who knows?
By the way, this is going in outtakes.
That's fine by me.
Be the storm, George.